Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And world premiere, Corey, tonight we have the Game Awards stuff.
Yes.
It happened.
It was a thing.
It was a thing that happened. The world's talking about it. Everybody cannot get enough of what that was, and we're going to talk about it tonight. Corey, before we do, though, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain. It's been a really nice weekend. I wish this weekend would have happened in like October or November, because it's been raining all weekend here where we live. Just consistent rain. It's cold, but not freezing cold. And it's like perfect fall weather, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, but because it is the month of December, you know, the month that comes between November and January, this time period is what? December. So
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, it's the Christmas season.
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Rain just doesn't really fit my ideal version of what that season should look like.
Yeah. And it's so, it's classic like late January energy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So while it was a great, very relaxing weekend, Game Awards, we were talking ahead of time. I feel like I have a lot of hobbies. I feel like I talk about a lot of my other random hobbies outside of gaming. One of the ones I've recently picked up is golf. I'm really, really, really into golf. That's because I like playing sports, being outside. I've torn both ACLs, so I can't play soccer anymore, and I really don't want to play anything that's going to like lead to me having a third ACL surgery. Because if any of our listeners have done it, they know it sucks. And I've done it twice, and that really sucks. But I got to play golf Friday, so to speak. And then I just playing a lot of games, a lot of cozy games. Still shout out. I've been playing so much Dave the Diver. Love it. Talk more about that later.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely in our Game Awards section. Going to be talking about that later. And then just been revisiting some games before our GOTY episode. And so it's a good weekend.
Love it.
How was your weekend, Chris?
Oh, it's been good. It's been super lazy on our end, I think, because there's been a lot of rain. And also we spent the last weekends doing a whole bunch of like getting ready for some family to come into town. So it was just kind of like a big just build up for that. Plus, last week of work was like really hectic for, I mean, kind of not no reason. Like there was reason behind it. It was just kind of like, you know, it was a lot of stuff just kind of coming out of nowhere that had to get done. So it was like there was no real way to plan for it. It was just kind of like, I'm working on this thing and now I got to drop it for this other thing because this thing still isn't done yet, even though we thought it might be. So a lot of that stuff, busy week, busy, you know, past weekend. So it was nice having just kind of a relaxing weekend to chill out and not have to worry about much. You know, especially after that Game Awards, Corey. It was a big one, and we had to recover because it was so much stuff. It was a lot of stuff. Corey, Game Awards happened on Thursday. Just big broad thoughts, Corey. How'd you feel about the game awards, the winter Keelys?
I thought overall it was fine. I think I walked away a little. Okay. I walked away underwhelmed. But I don't think I also had high expectations. It's a little bit of just like the slightest bit of being underwhelmed, so to speak. I just thought some of how Keighley and the Game Awards conducted their time throughout the award show was very appalling. Sounds too harsh of a word.
Mm-hmm.
But just for what is touted as the Game Awards, this is the biggest night in gaming. We want to celebrate games, developers, our like potential award winners, stuff like that. They didn't spend a lot of time doing that, is how I felt. And to Keighley's credit, and he's got come out and kind of like owned that some a bit. And we're going to talk about, I think, more of the meat of it. But this is just initial impression.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, you see Alan Wake 2 winning. When did Sam Lake come on to speak? Was it the second one? It was the first or second time he came on to accept the award. He was giving his speech. He was talking about like a colleague that had passed during development of the game. If I'm remembering it right, and was kind of getting like cut off. They were getting like a please wrap it up. Like the music was kicking in, and it's just like he's been talking for like 20 seconds. You know,
yeah.
I know you don't want the Chris Judge thing from last year where he talked for what, like 7 minutes, something like that, like a long time, but
like
not
that.
Like a exorbitant amount. In which he came out and like poked fun at it immediately this time around. So. You kind of thought, okay, that they're going to be a little better about it this year. He was getting a please wrap it up, and it's just like he's been up there for 20 seconds. What are we doing? Like, let him talk. I understand the 7 minute mark, but I feel like, you know, keep it under around the 2 to 3 minutes. I would say for a lot of these people, and I just feel like they were getting rushed compared to Kojima's 10 minute segment of, no offense to Kojima. I think it's going to be really cool, but just a whole lot of nothing. Or Matthew McConaughey's random awkward appearance where he announced the Mass Effect spinoff, which I mean, it's not, but it's kind of what it looked like, which I'm excited for.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just, how everything was done, rushing, announcing awards, rushing the award winners and how they were speaking. It was just kind of, just left a little bit of a bad taste on my mouth with it. It's nothing that I don't think I shouldn't have expected, if that makes sense. But still, when you see it, you're just like, come on, like, let's just be better about this.
So, yeah.
But well, those are my thoughts.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something that we can dig into a little bit more as we go. But I mean, for anybody who's not super in on the whole Game Awards thing, if you're a cozy gamer, if you're a casual person, you don't really keep up with a lot of that. Like, yeah, the Game Awards have been a thing for 20 years ish. Originally they were a Spike TV thing. They were also like, I think the name of it then was also like the Game Awards, but as anybody who's aware of like Spike from back in the early to mid 2000s, it was not like that was not necessarily the best face of video game stuff. Spike's whole thing was like, what was it, like the Channel for Men, I think was the like their, it was one of like, I can't remember their exact tagline, but it was like, let me see if I can look it up. Spike, I don't know, I'll find it. But yeah, so they did that, and then Keighley was kind of in charge of it whenever it was at Spike, but he kind of took it over and it became his own thing in like 10 years ago.
2014.
So like 2013, 2014. That was one of the Game Awards has like functioned in two areas, basically, where it serves as like, here is a place for game developers to get some recognition, not just as like, oh, this is Game of the Year, because I mean, like a lot of outlets have like their Game of the Year list, but nobody has like, okay, well, what's the best like driving game of the year? What's the best soundtrack of the year? And so like, it's an opportunity for them to do that. But at the same time, especially over the last like 5+ years, it's become this very like, it's become like a second E3 in a way where it became like, this is where you're seeing like some of the biggest reveals of the year are happening here. I mean, this is where you saw like Elden Ring for the first time. It's where you see like Joker coming to Smash. It's where you see, I can't remember some of the stuff. Like, I think like Uncharted 4, like I think the initial like teaser trailer was shown at the Game Awards. Like, so I mean, it's big meaty stuff that you're not seeing necessarily, that you're, you know, could be shown at like an E3 or something, but they're coming here. And so like, it's always kind of been at that crossroads where it's like, it is this weird kind of fusion of things. And I think like the last few years, the criticism has been that effectively where it's like, it's shifted so much more toward like what the Spike Awards were potentially, because I think that that's one of the biggest, like, I don't know at what point to dig super deep into any of it, but it's like, you know, I think that's one of the things that like gamers in general kind of really look at as, to use Gen Z terminology, cringe. Or I think that's what people would consider like cringe, would consider like super embarrassing about, like, that was like those old E3s where you would have these celebrities that clearly had no connection to gaming, like who would come out and they would like stumble through some copy and it would be there to like get some attention. Yeah. And granted, like, you know, Keely is careful about like having some celebrities who do have some connection. Like in this year, you had like Anthony Mackie, who maybe he's a gamer, maybe he's not, but like he's part of the Twisted Metal like show. That's relevant. Timothée Chalamet showed up, who like people were surprised about, but he has his own like YouTube legacy of being a gamer and stuff. And like, you know, it's not all necessarily
known gamer.
Right.
Self-proclaimed, like, right. Plays a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, it's more careful selection, but I think that was, cause I mean, full transparency, I didn't watch a ton of the actual show live because, again, we had some family in town. We were helping them like move some stuff and do things. So I was like keeping up with it here and there. And it wasn't until like maybe the last third that I actually could watch it. But I mean, even then, like you could see, because it was in some of the later half that you were getting like some of the Fallout TV show stuff they were talking about. The Game of the Year with like Timothée Chalamet was later on too. I think Christopher Judge also came out. That was in the later bits. That was one of the key criticisms, I think, coming out of it has been, hey, like this is the Game Awards. This is our opportunity to celebrate developers, and we're still so concerned with, you know, these celebrity endorsements. We're so concerned with like looking forward. And I saw a criticism that I think really summed it up as like, you know, the video game industry is so often only looking forward, like with things like E3, with like new reveals and new like cover stories and all these things, everybody is just looking forward. And whenever a game comes out, people play it for like a week and then they're done. And then it's forgotten by like the memory. Mm-hmm. And the Game Awards is like this one opportunity to celebrate, to like look back in a similar way to like the Oscars or something, where they look back and they look at like, here are these actors or directors or whoever who have passed away this year. Here are these, like, you know, moments from film. Here are all these things. Like, it's an opportunity for everybody to come together and have their like moment of celebration. And it has the glitz and it has the corny jokes and stuff, but it's like, that's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that that was kind of the big criticism this year, especially, was like, it's becoming more and more apparent how little, not necessarily that Keely cares personally about, like, you know, looking back and having this kind of like retrospective moment, but just how little money it makes and how little value it provides to have this just night of introspection, to have mm-hmm. this thing where it's like devs get to be together and just, like, you know, share some time together and get to, like, just look back, like, no sort of incentive to be like having all these celebrity guests, having all of these big reveals, everything, just having this almost kind of like boring night of like, yeah, the studio that wins Game of the Year can get up and they can talk for, you know, 5-10 minutes about their thing. The studio that, like, wins Best Art Direction can get up and just be like, yeah, you know, like, maybe they're not digging in deep, but it's like, yeah, they get the chance to talk about their thing. And I think it's been like a real and legitimate criticism that people are like, yeah, I walked away from that show and I saw Simu Liu talk about his foot a lot. Mm-hmm. I saw Anthony Mackie, like, hyping up people. I saw Walton Goggins, who, like, mm-hmm. probably going to be great. I love Walton Goggins. He's going to be in Fallout, but, like, he doesn't strike me as a gamer. He doesn't strike mm-hmm. me as a guy who's, like, super invested in the subculture. And then at the same time, all of them get significantly more time to talk than Aonuma, who's mm-hmm. been directing Legend of Zelda for decades. And mm-hmm. it doesn't seem to necessarily add up the way that it should for an event that's called the Game Awards.
Yeah.
So.
No, I feel like we're in very similar minds of just kind of, it just felt gross, I think, at times. Of just, I think the celebrity bits of it were just a little too in the face. I think something like a Matthew McConaughey, I thought was going to be really interesting. I thought it was going to be almost like a Keanu Reeves situation where they're like, oh yeah, you're going to see him in this game, Travelers. Mm-hmm. And which they had him come out because it's very much inspired by Mass Effect, but also very much inspired by Mass Effect. If you've watched the trailer, it's kind of shocking. And then if you look at the development team, it is people from Mass Effect and can't remember what the other game was, but it's also clearly inspired by Interstellar, which is mm-hmm. a very famous role for Matthew McConaughey. And they're like, oh yeah, he's going to be in the game. And in the entire trailer, unless I missed it, just doesn't show him at all. And
yeah, I think at least, and I could be wrong, because that was also a thing of, because like, you had texted me, like, I was watching it, but I was watching it on mute. Like, yeah. I just had stepped out for a second. And I happened to just, like, look at it. And you texted me something like, Matthew? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, I have no, and like, whenever you said Matthew McConaughey, I was like, I did not see Matthew McConaughey in any of that. I don't know what you're talking about. And I mean, from what I understand, like, it's his voice, like, his likeness isn't in it, but he's a voice actor in it. So, yeah,
it was just so odd. And I think Matthew McConaughey is a very charismatic person. I think I don't know if I want to call him interesting, but he seemed so uncomfortable on that stage as well. A kind of another moment where he's just like, I don't know how these people are going to react to me. I'm expecting a bigger reaction than I'm getting, because most people were kind of like me, like, is that Matthew McConaughey? What? You know, WTF is Matthew McConaughey doing on the stage, kind of a thing, similar to a Keanu Reeves situation. But he came out after, I feel like, the Cyberpunk 2077 trailer dropped, because it shows him at the end and he walks out like, oh yeah, that's me, kind of a thing. Yep. It's Matthew McConaughey basically explaining Interstellar to the crowd. And yeah. It's like, yeah, you're going to be able to play Interstellar. Then you see Mass Effect. And I guess, yeah, it is Matthew McConaughey's voice. But I don't know. It was a very weird, all around, just kind of like, I think, gross night in some aspects. And I think we're going to talk about stuff that we watched that we were excited for. And I'm okay with yucking the Game Awards yum just a little bit because they kind of deserve it. But also, I don't want to like dunk on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a weird thing in that, like, to me, the easy answer seems to, because like Summer Game Fest, for instance, Summer Game Fest isn't one event. It's like it's this week long kind of like series of things where stuff is like, maybe there are a couple of days that are more like, this is when the big stuff's happening. But like they kind of lay it out as like, oh, this is this big kind of like release window kind of thing where people are showing off new trailers, whatever. And like the easy answer, because I mean, that's the thing is like, the Game Awards just kind of has always seemed at odds with itself that it wants to be like a winter E3 while also being the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. And it seems like such an easy answer to just say, why not make a winter game fest where it's like you have your award night that is just kind of like, you know, yeah, you have the spectacle, you have the big like orchestral stuff, you put the money in, you make it this big thing. It doesn't have to be in like a hotel conference room, but like you do that thing and you make it about the developers and you make it about like the retrospection and looking back and like, you know, not just glossing over, okay, we had this category for this thing, I'm going to mention it in passing to the point where you may not even hear it and it may never like, which has always been a thing that's bothered me, like regardless of any of this, like that has always been a thing where it's like, it blows my mind that they, one, have categories that they gloss over like that, but they also have categories before the show even starts that they gloss over like that. Like, they'll be like, oh, we technically start at 7:30, but it's like we start at 8. And then like if you tune in before in that 7:30 to 8:30 or that 8 o'clock window, there are games being awarded.
Oh yeah.
It is such a weird thing. But it seems like such an easy answer to then move it, like move the big announcement day over to like saying, hey, here's our award show. This is us looking back. This is us taking the time to like no announcements, none of this like we're looking forward BS. It's like we're celebrating the stuff that happened. Let's look back. Let's look at these things. And then the next day being like, okay, announcement time. Let's go. And then it's just like do it like a Nintendo Direct. Like make it like don't put it in a big theater. Make it like this produced stream thing. I don't know. But like it is such a weird thing because it's like, you know, it's not the fault of the developers who are showing off their games here. It's marketing. Like they're going to take that opportunity. They want to get they know that people are watching this. They want to get their stuff in front of their eyes. And it's not, and I don't know how much of it, I mean, I feel like Keighley is to blame in a lot. Like, oh, yeah. I think there's like, it's hard to sit there and be like, well, Keighley can't take, like, it's a team of people, but at the same, like Keighley's been doing this for a long time. He has a lot of clout. He has a lot, like if he were to sit there and be like, yeah, this just is not working. Like they could switch it up. But the reality is like, you know, they know that. I mean, I was looking at it on Wikipedia, like the first Game Awards that Keighley hosted had under 2 million viewers. Last year's had over 100 million.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, it's just, that's how it works. Like that's how this stuff goes, is they're going to follow what the money is and they're going to look at it that way. And I hate that, but I think there are also ways that you can do it better. Like, you know, again, no shade on people like Hideo Kojima, super, super excited for him, whatever he's doing. But it's like, he doesn't have to be up there talking for 15 minutes. You don't have to have this extended interview with him. You can just, if nothing else, just be like, Kojima's here. You knew he'd be here. Here's his newest game. Bah, 30 seconds. Boom, we're done. Move on. Rather than it being like this big, like, I don't know. I mean, it sounds mean, but like a big masturbatory event where everybody's just standing around. Just like, look at my friends. We're just talking about this cool stuff that we're making. And when in reality, again, like there are devs there who have worked really hard to make some cool stuff or have been legacies in the industry for so long and are not getting the opportunity to talk about it. Or like have some of that, or again, also if they're not like the person, like the game in this big category, they're not even getting any time to talk. Like, you know what, like Armored Core 6 won for best, like best something, like action. Like, I mean, like a notable kind of thing.
Yeah,
but there wasn't a presenter. It was just kind of like a buy thing where it's like, oh yeah, by the way, go take your bathroom break. While you're taking a break, here are going to be 8 categories that you don't care about. And it is just kind of like it's a disappointing thing because, like, again, it is one of those kind of things where, like, I feel like as somebody who is a gamer, who is also close to a lot of people who are not gamers, I think it would be cool if the Game Awards could be something like the Oscars, for instance, where you did, like, because people have Oscar watch parties. They go, they, like, you know, people get together. They watch it. They see what happens, whether or not you're, like, maybe you've seen every movie, where maybe you haven't seen a movie in 5 years, but it's like there's something there you can get into it regardless of where you are on that spectrum. And the Game Awards doesn't feel like that. Like, it feels very insular. It still feels like it's almost kind of like this embarrassing thing that you have to kind of like explain away. Like, yeah, Matthew McConaughey's up there. He's acting a little weird. I don't know why. Just close your eyes for a second. We'll get through it. And, you know, it's just, maybe one day it'll be like that where it'll be this, you know, we have, because games have moved so far to become like, now they're prestige television and now they're like being viewed as these big cinematic works of art. Hopefully one day the culture will also like move forward to where like you can have a big boy award show that isn't just this constantly. And maybe not, but you know, that'd be nice.
No, it would be. And I think a lot... I think the biggest problem with the award show and a lot of, I think that comment you made of like video games trying to be this big cinematic works of art. I think a big problem with gaming is it's very insecure of itself, is that it always wants to be compared to like high art, high movie art, high like art of television, so on and so forth. When in reality, like it is. And kind of always has been. It's just there's been like a odd like label of like geekiness or like I'm trying to use like you people who game understand what's going on there. But in reality, like everyone's playing games. Just not everyone's playing every game. And so I think the industry as a whole really needs to move past that insecurity of like, well, you know, it's a great like 20-hour game, but it's nowhere near as impactful as this 2-hour movie, which is just a load of horse crap at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so it's disappointing. I think there's like easy solutions as well that they just don't want to do. Like you mentioned, like a Winter Game Fest all week. Here's a bunch of trailers. Here's developers for other games, for these games getting to talk about why they're working on this, what they're excited about, so on and so forth. Shorten the awards down instead of a 4-hour thing. It's now like 2.5 hours. You present awards, you have like a 20, 30 minute segment where you hear from 3 upcoming developers about their games. Hideo Kojima comes out, he gets his 10 minutes. Hey, that was slotted in. Yeah, we're going to have someone else come out. They're going to talk about their game that they're coming up. And then you show a couple of trailers in between. You get the best of both worlds. But it's just turned into like this 4-hour just fest, effectively. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's disappointing. And I think a lot of people are right to be disappointed and to like want more. Or expect better, I think is probably a better way to phrase it.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about what we did see game wise to go from like, here's everything we hated about this and disagreed with on a moral level? Should we scale that back and be like, well, so now that we got our out, what did we like?
What
grabbed our attention?
Spoiler alert, the stuff that really has nothing to do with the Game Awards themselves, the games that are just from developers that happen to be featured on the show, I had to play a little bit of catch up, but there was a lot of stuff. Like, I think some of it was super exciting. I don't feel like there was a whole lot that wasn't at least a little exciting. Like, I think that's the thing, is like, sometimes you go into these and it's like, there's some really heavy hitters, but there's also some not great stuff. And I feel like most of the stuff here was at least like pretty cool. What caught your attention, Corey? What was your big thing?
My big thing.
Your biggest thing. What was it?
Oh gosh, I don't know what my biggest thing was. I think with this award show specifically, there was a bunch of like little, maybe not little, I think that's a poor way to phrase it, but just smaller like announcements where it's just like, oh, well, here we go. As we talked about, Metaphor ReFantazio got shown off a lot more at this, and it's the Persona teams have worked on it, and it looks like they are doing, a lot going on in that trailer. It seems to be open world, but my guess is it's going to be more like segmented open world, palace, dungeon, open world base, and maybe like a prime like hub area or hub world, similar how kind of Persona just does, but it's doing a mix of the Musou style combat and also a mix of the Persona turn-based combat. And so altogether, it seems incredibly ambitious. I think they're combining a lot of things that works for their older games, not older games, but works for the Persona games, while also trying to find how do we make this its own unique identity? And they're blending that. And I think the Musou jump for the Persona 5 Strikers that came out a couple years ago, I like that game. I can't remember where that game finished on my game of the year. What was it, 2 years ago? Or was that last year?
I think so.
It finished in my top 10 one of those 2 years. I can't remember exactly which one. Yeah. And I really liked it. And I think they nailed the Musou style. And so, very excited to see how that's going to turn out. I don't think we got a release date. I think it was just 2025, they said. I don't even know if they actually said any, put any date on it. I think they just showed off a pretty meaty trailer, to be fair to it. So,
Which was nice. And they also showed, Strikers. Okay, Strikers was 2021. Okay. So that would have been a couple of years ago. That would have been our first game of the year list.
I'll pull up that list to figure out where it landed while you talk about something that caught your eye.
Yeah. They also showed Persona 3 remake some more, which was super cool to see. I mean, I'm hyped about it regardless, but they showed some of that. I think some of the coolest stuff that I saw, just a couple of things that caught my eye, not really in order of like better or whatever, but yeah, I mean, it was some of the like smaller stuff. There was a game by the developers of Ori, Moon Studios, who I don't know that they've done a ton outside of Ori, like before Ori. I don't really know their past, but they're coming out with a new game called No Rest for the Wicked. And it's like a it looks kind of like a isometric hack and slash, kind of the same camera style as something like a Tunic or a Death Store, but it has a very maybe kind of like Darksiders art style, like, you know, pretty like it's a fantasy story, but it's very like kind of dark and grim, and looks great, like looked really cool seeing that. There also was a game by the developers. I can't remember if this had any gameplay, but a game from the devs behind Dead Cells called Windblown.
Yes.
They had like an animated trailer. Yeah, it was, they did have
gameplay. Had gameplay.
Yeah, I'm looking back at the trailer. They did have some gameplay. Also, same sort of style, like that isometric, you know, action brawler thing. Hades also kind of comes to mind as like a potential comparison. But it might be roguelike-ish. It looks like maybe there's like a multiplayer component. Yeah. If not, that you have like some bots or whatever in there kind of assisting you, but looked really cool. Had a very seemed very like, at least from their trailer, like adult given the art style. Like it has this very like Saturday morning cartoon art style, but yet like here's this
insanely, you know, violent,
right, here's this, you know, pig boy who's getting sliced in half by a robot. So yeah, there was that. There was also Pony Island 2.
Yes.
Panda Circus. Mm-hmm. Which I am vaguely familiar with Pony Island 1, but like mainly just kind of from the fact that it's by the same guy, people that did Inscription. And so like, you know, now off the heels of Inscription, I think there's just like the overwhelming sense going, looking at it, this like, oh, I'm watching this trailer and more than likely this is telling me nothing about the game. I'm going to go into this game and, you know, I'm going to be very surprised about what is that, which to be fair, like in the trailer, I mean, I'm pulling it up now. Like it's all over the place. Like it has very like kind of like old school PC kind of art style to it, and then it's switching, like there's some FMV stuff in there, then it's like a, you know, first person thing that almost kind of looks like maybe Stanley Parable-ish. I mean, it's all over the place, so I mean, yeah, they're definitely going hard with that. I mean, there was a lot of just some cool stuff. I think one of the other like big ones that that caught my eye was the what was it? I don't know necessarily like big ones, but I mean, they also showed like Rise of the Ronin, which hadn't been mentioned in the past, is kind of like a Ghost of Tsushima ish kind of game, whenever, because I think they were originally kind of like talked about around the same time, but this is by Koei Tecmo, who you know, they have like Ninja Gaiden, Neo kind of stuff, so it's going to be more in that vein than like the cinematic stuff. And there was also, what else was there that looks Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. That was a trailer by Don't Nod, who we've talked about recently, having made Jusant. But it looks like it's supposed to be kind of like a Life is Strange, but a little bit of like some horror-ish. Looks kind of cool. So yeah. What else do you got, Corey? What else stood out as like, this was really cool?
I mean, there was the Hellblade sequel got a pretty beefy trailer. So Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, which I feel like we've never given it a ton of time, but we've talked about Hellblade in the past, just I think kind of in passing.
I've never played Hellblade. So, I've never had much thoughts about it just for that reason. So
I would strongly encourage you to play it, check it out. I strongly encourage anyone who hasn't checked it out to go play it. It effectively follows Senua, who has schizophrenia at this time, and it's like this like low, high fantasy, like a Nordic tale. And people don't know what schizophrenia is, and so she believes that she can hear her ancestors effectively. I believe if I'm remembering correctly, it's been years since I played it. And as you play the game, you hear the voices, like they come over, they're quiet, they're loud, they scream, they whisper, whimper, try to like strong arm you into doing these things. It's an incredible experience. It's a short game. I think it's like 8 hours. And they're following it up with a pretty beefy visual upgrade. And it seems roughly the same style of gameplay. They'll probably add a bit more to it, but incredible experience. I would also, whenever you play it, I would also look into how they filmed it, because there's, I think, a short documentary on how they did like the voices. They would like put a microphone in the center of the room and have people like say their voices in like different cadences and different like frequent cadences and loudness, but they would spin them in a chair. That way you could hear like their voice like echoing around the room and like being farther away or closer depending on where they were at, because you'll hear so many voices and some sound so distant, some sound so close. It's highly recommended to play with a headset as well, so, because it plays with it better. Anyway, spiel over. Got me very excited. Really pumped to check that out. God of War Valhalla, the DLC. Called it, sort of. I said a DLC was coming. I just thought it'd be more an Atreus-centered one. But I'm pumped for this roguelite mode for God of War Valhalla, which is wrapping up the events of God of War Ragnarok with I think they've nailed it as a reflective journey for Kratos. So I imagine they're going to touch on more of the OG games, and that seems to be a little bit of the mindset with that. Also, No Rest for the Wicked, I thought was very cool. Visions of Mana. I've never played a Mana game, before by Square Enix. I own them, just haven't got around to playing them, but I think it's cool, regardless, that Square Enix is bringing back a Mana game with a new entry of Visions of Mana. I know a lot of people are excited about that.
And that's which, piggybacking off of that for a second, I also saw that and I'm like tentatively excited. I think partially because like I haven't played like a ton of Mana. Like Secrets of Mana was one that missed me whenever I was whenever I was a kid. But I have played some of Trials of Mana whenever that they had their kind of remake on modern consoles. And I was not into it at all. I don't know. Maybe I need to try it again. In that game, you can choose from like to start off as like one of six characters. Maybe I just didn't. I don't know. But it really just, I remember being like, I am not having a single bit of fun in this whole thing. So I don't know. Like I'm curious to see, because like I'm a sucker for like that bright colored JRPG, but I don't know. I'm curious what's gonna happen.
There's also I can't remember the voice actor's name, but he was in the voice of Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins. He had a very moving speech in what I thought was like a pretty solid like segment of the Game Awards where he talked about how he played video games growing up, and he's recently lost his father. And to channel his grief, he's created and founded his own game studio. And they're making a game, Tales of Kenzera, Kenzera Zao. And it looked really good. But I think just like this promise of this is kind of like how he's dealing with his grief. This is someone I know nothing about either, but yeah. I just found it very impactful how he spoke and the way he delivered and what he how he talked about his game. And like the game seems to be, you know, you're playing as what I'm assuming is to be Kenzara, who is speaking with his past ancestors to move through the world. Seems very interesting. I'm very excited for that to see more of it. They didn't give us a release date for it from what I could tell, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like his name, by the way, I'm might butcher it, but it's Abubakar Salim. Salim. But yeah, also he's 30 years old, which as an aside, I have seen multiple things this week that have made me feel so old. Including stuff like that, where it's like, hey, here's this guy doing this cool stuff, and he's 30, or he's 30. I'm older than he is. And it makes you feel a way. It comes out April 23rd of next year, according to this article. So
I love that.
But yeah, it looks super cool.
Let's see what else was there. There's Blade. Yeah, Arcane Leon, who most recently did Deathloop, is collaborating with Marvel to make a Blade game.
Which I think is like one of the, it's legitimately one of the weirder, at least on the surface, like collaborations. Watching the trailer, like the art style looks super cool. It looks very arcane, and like it's entirely possible that it plays as like a like given Dishonored and, you know, Deathloop's kind of lineage and stuff. I think it's entirely probable to like see it through that lens, but it is like, I feel like there's so many other studios that I would associate with like, oh, this is a new Marvel game developed by, you know, rather than Arcane.
It feels very like, I think it's a good collab considering I think how good Deathloop was. I think we were both very hot on it early and kind of cooled as the year went. But I think it's going to be a good partnership. There was also a very big reveal from Hello Games announcing Light No Fire. Now, if people don't know who Hello Games is, they made No Man's Sky, which is a very successful game. But at launch was atrociously, horrendously reviewed and was bad. And they have spent roughly 7 years now releasing effectively just free updates on it, if I'm not mistaken, making it into their vision of what they want this game to be. And now he's effectively come out and Sean Murray has come out. Sorry, I was looking for his name. And effectively has promised to create Earth in a video game, this massive giant planet that where everyone can be at once, and there's mountains, there's riding dragons, there's fantasy, there's house building. It's everything you could ever want in a game. And I thought I was just looking at him, I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself? Why? And he jokingly like made a lot of fun of himself after. I think Twitter or X is a kind of a cesspool. I've like slowly pulled away from it, and I think we have as well. But I was keeping up with the Game Awards on Twitter, just seeing what some people were saying. Because I mean, as we've been talking about, we were just kind of disappointed, and I saw a lot of things agreeing with it. But I saw some of his tweets during it where it was. Like people are like, all right, Sean, come out there, just announce your game, under promise, over deliver. Sean, I'm going to make Earth. And it was him just like poking fun at himself. And he's an excellent follow on Twitter. He is my recommendation when we get to the end of this episode, because that man is hilarious.
Yeah.
But all that's to say, my expectations are very, very tempered for whenever Light No Fire releases. I'm very excited for Light No Fire 3 years after it releases, because I imagine that's when it will be kind of what they're looking for. But I still thought it was a excellent and hilarious reveal.
Yeah, it's when Hello Games 2, for people who are not like familiar with them, I looked them up on Wikipedia just to like be just to double check like numbers and stuff. But yeah, according to at least back in 2020, so they may have grown since then, but like they had 26 employees. Back in,
it's about the same based on what he was talking.
Yeah, they've always been a small studio, and which is partially why No Man's Sky got as much attention as it did. I mean, granted, it was like a very ambitious thing, but it was also like, hey, this is a indie studio who are making one of potentially the most ambitious games ever. Mm-hmm. So it is this kind of like, you know, they are really moving mountains to kind of make this happen. But like, Light No Fire sounds, at least on the surface, like something that could potentially solve a lot of, because like No Man's Sky, I played whenever it first came out, really enjoyed, even despite some of the stuff, but it was like the game got significantly better over time, but No Man's Sky was still designed to be this, like, you know, you are traveling the galaxy, and you are like, sometimes you're landing on this planet that like there's nothing there, but like, you know, now you can build your base and you can do all these kind of things, and it's like, yeah, you know, that's cool, whatever. But it's like there's so much of No Man's Sky that does kind of feel like you are having to like seek out your own fun. Like, they're almost kind of like, you know, we've built all these tools, but, you know, don't rely on us to create the stuff that you can do in it. You know, you have to go and do it. And at least with Light No Fire, like, it seemed like, you know, from the framing, it's like, hey, we're making a single place. We're going to make it dense. We're going to make it like full of life and all of this stuff. And even if it's the same sort of thing, there is more opportunity for it to feel very like organic and fun, because there's so much stuff packed together. You're not having to, again, like similar kind of criticism with Starfield, where it's like, you know, there's a level of friction to having to like move around that much only to find nothing. And like, depending on your perspective, you know, maybe that's an adventure. Maybe, you know, maybe you're not looking at it the same way. Maybe that's like a really exciting thing. But for some people, it's like, I want to just know that I'm gonna go in this cave and there's something worthwhile for me. And so, I'm super excited about it. And also, like, I'm super excited that they're continuing to like make really cool stuff, because obviously have the chops for it and the brains for it to really think outside the box. So if they want to do that, then by all means, feel free.
No, I am, like I said, tempered expectations, but I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be very cool. And then last, but certainly not least, Final Fantasy 16 announced two DLCs. One that would drop that night, for the God of War Ragnarok Valhalla DLC that does drop, I think, Tuesday. So also very cool. But Final Fantasy 16 dropped or announced two DLCs, Echoes of the Fallen, which is out now, which I've been playing a little bit. I don't know if we're going to get into a ton of what we've been playing, but we've been playing a little bit of it. And can't remember what the other one was called, but it was effectively... I don't know if I really want to spoil Final Fantasy 16. Well, I don't think it really spoils it. The
other one's called The Rising Tide.
The Rising Tide, which is in reference to, I'm going to, it's not really a spoiler, but skip 2 minutes at a time if you don't want to hear anything. They're effectively doing a Leviathan DLC, which in the icons or, you know, the summons of Final Fantasy 16, there's 8 of them, but we only ever see 7 of them. And yep. Leviathan is missing effectively,
yep.
is what
yep.
it's what the game implies. And I think we talked about it when we came out, like, do we think they'll do a DLC for this? And
yeah.
I think I was on the pro side and you're like, nah, I think they're going to be done with it. And I'm excited to see that they are doing it.
Yeah. I was also curious what was going, because I mean, they are very like explicit about the fact that, like, you know, he doesn't have this presence in the mm-hmm. game, despite everybody else literally having mm-hmm. it. So, like, you know, even if, like, I wasn't sure what their direction would be, you know, I think it's the right call to kind of yep. go that direction and have that kind of thing in there. So that's cool. I will probably, I don't know. It's always hard to tell with me in DLC. Like, I always say, like, oh yeah, you know, I'll play that. And then, like, I don't, like, it's nothing to do against the content. It's just, like, you know, it's partially that thing of, like, getting back into it again. Like, I feel like whenever I was in high school and stuff, like, cause I remember, like, Fallout 3 coming out with DLC, yeah. and, like, I would just eat it up, and like Skyrim, playing a ton of that DLC, and, like, games would come out with DLC, and I just give it all yep. to me. And now it's a lot more just kind of like up in the air. I don't ever know if I'm actually going to play it or not. But regardless, looked cool. I can get behind it.
One more.
But, yes.
It is paid DLC. I will say that it was $10. I did pick it up. Because I'm revisiting some of the games I played over this year for our Game of the Year episode.
Yeah.
But one more game I want to talk about, and it's a mix of the two, which is very convenient for me right now, but Dredge and Dave the Diver have announced yeah. that they are doing a collaborative effort for their games. It seems it's more Dave the Diver than Dredge, so I've been playing a lot of both. Recently, just yep. a lot of cozy gaming right now, and it seems as if the fish, like the moving fish market lady, is going to be coming to Dave the Diver, and yep. they're going to be adding a little bit of that horror nautical nonsense to it, which I'm here for. I'm very excited. I've been enjoying both games tremendously recently, and to see that collab, which makes so much sense, and for two games to be so, I would say, pretty big this year with a very similar theme, I think it's very exciting and very cool that they've yeah. decided to team up to do this. It's neat.
Yeah, I like that whenever indie devs do kind of go that direction with things, because, I mean, you see that with, like, Dead Cells would have, like, you know,
the Castlevania.
Hollow Knight and Castlevania. I mean, yeah, the big stuff with Castlevania this year, but even, like, smaller, they would have, like, characters like Shovel Knight or, you know, whoever kind of show up, and it would be this kind of thing. And I think it's a cool thing whenever, like, the indie devs are just kind of collaborating and playing together. I feel like Dave the Diver is, like, one of the big games that's going to just, like, completely miss me for the year. Like, I wish it hadn't, but it was like, it hit Switch at the end of October, but it was like, I mean, at that point I was playing Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, now Baldur's Gate was on the, it was like, you know, I mean, maybe I get to Dave the Diver. Who knows? But, like, that feels like the biggest omission in everything. Because, like, looking at screenshots of it, I'm like, man, it's like I would dig on this game.
Mm-hmm.
I could get behind this. But yeah, I don't know. Any other big stuff that that popped up that you were wanting to talk about?
I think that was it. I think the only thing left is Baldur's Gate 3 won Game of the Year.
Yep.
I think that was very deserved. I've seen there are like Spider-Man 2 fans online who are very, very like upset about it. But it just feels like a bunch of trolls recently. Or not recently, really. I mean, I think Spider-Man 2 could be plenty of people's Game of the Year. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think from a absolute like gaming technical scope, everything presentation, I think it was always going to be Baldur's Gate 3. There was like a brief like 3 seconds where Timothy Chalamet paused, where I thought they might give it to Alan Wake 2, because Alan Wake 2 I think won like 3 or 4 awards on the night. I'm like, wait, are they?
And also had a general like big presence in the fact that like we didn't mention it, but like they had the big live performance of Heart of Darkness, and
that was incredible. I sent that to one of our friends, listener of the show, Wade, and he was like, what am I watching? What's going on? And so I explained it, and he was like, so that sequence is actually in the game. And I'm like, yeah, like beat for beat. And he was like, what's the point of it? And then I had to explain the point of it. And he was like, whoa, wait, what? And he got really interested. I don't know if he'll play it. I would love for him to, but it was enough for him to like, wait, walk me through this, because this makes no sense.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, it makes total sense, but it absolutely makes no sense out of context.
Nothing makes more sense than this.
Yeah. That was sick. But yeah, Baldur's Gate 3, I thought was a very deserved win. Very happy for them. They announced this out on Xbox. So if you haven't seen that, literally sprint. This isn't a walk, don't run. This is a sprint. And yeah, I thought that was the right call.
Yeah.
It's
like I hate it for Spider-Man, because I mean Insomniac does phenomenal work and Spider-Man 2 is a great game, but you know, we kind of had this conversation whenever we were talking about like predictions, and it's like it's a tough thing whenever you are coming back and you are like just you are making a potentially better, or if not better, just like another version of what you've done before, because at that point, like, yeah, it's still a wonderful game, but that wow factor is lost, and you are like, you're not necessarily bringing like anything to the table that's like, man, this is moving the needle in some huge way. Which again is kind of like, I think the thing, I mean, Tears of the Kingdom granted had tremendous, like, you know, new stuff with, I mean, with things like Ultra Hand and just all like the fact that they were able to make effectively like the same map feel so fresh again, I think is huge. But I think that was the thing, was like Baldur's Gate, like people like saw that as such a new experience. And I think it stuck with people in a bigger way. And same thing with Alan Wake too, like that being the way that, like the direction of that and the way that it was presented was just so different. Even if like, you know, even if some people didn't like the gameplay as much as Spider-Man 2, it's like, well, but this is telling such a more interesting and compelling story in such a more interesting way. How can we not recognize this? So, I mean, a lot of cool stuff, excited about it. Hopefully next year they separate these two puppies up and we can just celebrate looking forward, celebrate looking back in two separate nights. Will they?
So. No.
But you know, it's maybe it'll happen. Also too, they forgot to mention this because I don't think it mattered too much, but also I can't even fully remember if this was at the Game Awards, but Matt Mercer is part of a Meta Quest game that looks like ass.
I saw that and I'm like, my poor sweet summer child, Matthew, I know they have tossed a brick of cash at you, and I don't begrudge you for accepting that, which also Critical Role is helping sponsor one of the games. I think it might have been Legend of Kenzaru.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's either that or the Don't Nod game. No.
Okay.
It's one of the two.
Okay.
I can't remember which one, but yeah, I saw that and I'm like, oh man, this just looks so bad. This is, I'm sorry.
Well, and it's a thing too. And I told you this whenever I saw it pop up was, I think it's one of the biggest tragedies because it's made by Senzaru Games.
Mm-hmm.
Who Senzaru Games, if you're not familiar, like the biggest, I mean, they've never been like a big developer, but in my mind, the thing that I recognize with them is that they were the ones who effectively like took over the mantle of Sly Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like they were responsible for a lot of like Sony collection ports. So like they did the Sly collection, they did the God of War collection, they did they did a number of these things, but they were kind of like they were set up to be like the Sly Cooper, just, the Sucker Punch laid it down, they were taking it up. And Thieves of Time, which came out 10 years ago, was kind of set up to have like a fuller, longer life. And I don't know, I mean, plenty of things could have happened, who knows, but like Sanzaru was purchased by Facebook at some point. Mm-hmm. And was just relegated to only VR games there on out, which is just, I think, a travesty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, I mean, it makes me sad thinking about just because it's partially them, but it's also partially the fact that it's like, yeah, we may never get a Sly Cooper game ever again, and that's fun to think about. Yeah, I hate it. But yeah, Corey, moving away from sad stuff.
Yeah.
What we've been playing. Moving on. You've been playing more Dave the Diver. You've been going back and playing some old stuff.
Yeah. I've been playing some Dave the Diver, which is like after the initial recommendation, played it a fair amount, really enjoyed it. And I've come back over, I'd say, the past like 2 weeks. And just been like, I wouldn't say like diving in, so to speak, but I've been playing like a day at a time, maybe 2 days at a time. Like I'll go dive in the morning, in the evening, sometimes at night, and I'll do a run with the sushi restaurant and I'll be like, okay, this was great. Collect my rewards, do some upgrades, XYZ, save, quit, and I come back. It's been kind of doing that and that's been really nice. It's been very enjoyable. It's not always a very relaxing game. There are some like high energy moments, but all around it's a great, just cozy, wonderful, laid back game. I love playing it on my Steam Deck handheld. I can't imagine playing it like on the screen, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Something about it just like in the Gen Z, I guess, where it gives me the ick. The idea of playing it like on the big screen. So I just love that. I've been playing more Dredge, which I talked about recently. It gives me just a similar vibe. I've knocked out, my story progress is around like 50-something% right now. I haven't put in a ton of time. A similar, that game, it's you play far more days at a time, but I've been kind of knocking out like partial quests at a time.
Yeah.
I'm working my way through the swamp area there for that. And that's just very interesting to see like such a, I came across the volcano place and it was just like too chaotic of a introduction from the guy. I'm like, I'm going to leave because the energy that you're bringing is not the reason I'm here. I'm sure I will need to come back to you for some things, but we're moving on. So I went to the swamp place and I thought, all right, this is nicer. And I think for the first time, it really made me be like, oh, I need a better fishing rod. Oh, yeah, I need to do stuff to go get a better, I need to get a fishing rod that I can actually fish with here in the swamp. Oh, I need to, because the game, again, I think is excellently designed for those moments where I've, you know, you hang around, you venture out eventually. Oh, I'm getting some better parts, better stuff. my rods are fine. You know, everything's going well. I get there. Oh, I actually, it just consistently, like, as any game should, but I think it just does it in such a natural, like, understanding way for the player without, like, explicitly telling me I need to go get a different fishing rod. I don't know. I just really enjoy it. I think it's excellently crafted. I love it. Along with that, been playing more Octopath Traveler 2. I'm working on some duo quest right now, a little bit of overlapping stories. And I think it's just getting better and better. And I really like it. I mean, it went very much under the radar. But also it didn't, I guess, at the same time. I think a lot of people who are like, have played plenty of it really, really like it. I think we're both two of those people as well. But I'm working my way through, and I want to get through a lot more before we record here in a couple of weeks, in like 2 weeks now. I'm going to do that. Then jumped into the Echoes of the Fallen Final Fantasy 16 DLC. One, just to check it out, but two, to revisit the game. Revisited Hi-Fi Rush, played through the entire opening chapter. They don't do New Game Plus, but you can like revisit chapters in the game. So I went through that with all. And so the difficulty didn't change. I should have changed the difficulty, but you still have all of your like, not summons, but you can call in all of your companions and you still have all your moves and extra everything. And I just like, it was a bloodbath, but not for me the entire time. You just like mow through it. It was so fun. And it reminded me why I loved it so much. And so that did the job. And then to kind of wrap it up, because you have a lot to share here in a second.
Oh, do I?
Oh, yes, you do. I've been jumping back into Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. And I just finished Dragon Roost Island, I believe is its name, that first sequence. So I wrapped that up earlier today, playing that handheld on my Steam Deck as well, which shockingly gives me like still great battery life playing it. I can play it usually shows around like 4 hours when I like first boot it up on a full charge on my deck.
Yeah.
For Wind Waker, which is shocking, because I'll boot up Hi-Fi Rush, which shows me like an hour and a half. Don't even get me started on Baldur's Gate 3. I boot that thing up and it's like, all right, yeah, you get 28 minutes. And it's just like, I think I can get about 30 minutes of Baldur's Gate 3 on my deck before it's just like, yo, I'm dead. Yeah. But yeah, I think Wind Waker brings that, along with Dredge and Dave the Diver, are three very oceanic or nautical games that are bringing all a similar vibe for me. And I'm just like, I don't know, I'm really, really enjoying it. I think it's so laid back. This time of year, it's nice to kind of just like, okay, I've made my peace on what I've missed and what I've played. And we're just going to like sit back and relax and not try and feel, not that I think there's stress to the podcast that we're making, us just talking and hanging out. But like, I really like, I think we really put, I think a lot of emphasis on our top tens at the end of the year. Like, here's what has brought us joy. Here's what we enjoyed the most. We also like, I think we want to be very respectful of all the games that did come out. So we like checking out all the new stuff. But when you reach this part of the year, you kind of just have to be like, well, I miss Goodbye the Volcano High. I want to play it. I probably will pick it up at some point next year, but it's not going to make the list this year. It might make games of the year that didn't come out this year, next year. And we still need to short that. I almost missed Dredge, and I mean, that's been great. I'm thinking there's, what was it? I can't even think of it. And it's not fair to it. There's another game I missed where I was really wanting to check it out. I'm like, I just don't have a chance of Sinnar. You talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I really want to check it out, but I'm like, I don't think I have the time and I don't want to force it. And so I'll probably play it next year as well. But I'm just going to miss out on it. And it's just kind of a tough time. Not a tough time. It's just, I've made the decision of like, you know what? No new games. We're going to play what we've been playing. We're going to play what we want to play. Check out things we want to like play and replay. And that's the end of it. And I'm very happy with that headspace and kind of like that mindset right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Mm-hmm. Look at you. It's coming into your own. Yeah.
I do what I can. I try.
All right.
But well, now after all that coziness,
that's been this episode.
You're going to ruin it. You're going to ruin it with your monsters and your depravity and your savageness.
For context, everybody, Chris has been playing Baldur's Gate 3 some more.
Yes.
And Corey, who once was very happy about that fact, is
distraught.
Is less happy about the fact. You might be aware over the last couple of weeks that I've been hyping up the fact that it's like, hey, I'm gonna multi-class people. Yeah, I want them to realize the best versions of themselves. Being purebreds is not the best version of yourself. You need to complement yourself with the strengths of others. And this week, my team is, I think they're level 7 now. It seemed like a decent area to have at least a, you know, a little bit of points in both sides. So everybody is officially multi-classed.
Disgusting.
I am in Act Two. I'm in Act Two. For people who have played the game, it's Thorm's Mausoleum is kind of the area that I am right now. Working through that. I don't really know, like in the grand scheme of things, where that is, but
something really, really big can happen there if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
Like, will force you to finish Act Two if you do it. So something to keep in mind.
Interesting.
As you, I think, if I am remembering it correctly.
Okay.
Have you found the Gauntlet of Shar?
Not yet. Okay. I've essentially kind of like started some of like I'm at the, I guess, like discovery phase of it where it's like, hey, look at this, these ruins, look at all this. So I mean, it's not like there's a whole lot of like actionable stuff happening right at this moment.
But I will say if you reach the end of this sequence, though, this doesn't spoil it, it will force you into the end game of Act Two. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
It locks you out of like everything.
Gotcha. Sweet. Well, to best equip my team to head into these new challenges, I have diversified their skill set. At this point, currently, Corey,
ruin my life.
Karlach, she's rocking Barbarian Fighter. Okay.
That's a good combo. That's a great combo, actually.
I think it's I don't really know what like a pure barbarian is going to bring to the table over that, but you know, she gets some extra like weapon proficiency. She gets the action surge. Like, I mean, she can go in, she can get a lot of hits in there. And
I would take her to level 9 barbarian because I believe that's when she gets brutal critical, which when she crits on a hit, she does more damage on top of the double.
I think right now she's level 5 barbarian 2 fighter, I think is where she is.
Get to like battle master for her because that'd be sick.
Yeah. So my bard, he is a bard fighter as well.
That's fine.
So he's
fine.
I'm taking the originally he was a bard of what are the ones? There's lore, swords, there's swords.
And Valor.
He was Valor.
I'm a big Valor guy. I love Valor boards.
He was Valor, but I felt like to better lean into some of his physical utility, I did switch him over to swords.
Either one's viable.
So. Yeah. So he is swords, and he's also a battle master fighter.
Yeah, that works.
Mm-hmm. So I'm letting him just have a little bit. I'm trying to beef him up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Give him, you know, a little bit more utility to kind of like mm-hmm. be out there. Shadowheart. Shadowheart is a cleric. She's a light cleric, I think is what I have her as currently.
Boo.
She was a Tempest cleric originally, but I wanted hear me out.
I kept her trickery because it was just
really very, okay. I get it from the canon standpoint. Perspective, right? But it was just. I don't know.
It is a weaker subclass.
Yeah.
Light is just... What is it? There's life and light, and life is just very functionally great, but it's just so vanilla and bland. Yeah. Light is the fire one, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe. I think so. Yeah, trickery like seemed like it would, at least from the outset, like seemed like if I had Asterion and was like had like rogue stuff and mm-hmm. was trying to do a lot more sneaky things, that some of that would come in handy. But it just like immediately registered as I'm not going to have much of a use for a lot of this skill set. It seems like
it's far more applicable in like actual D&D trickery domain is.
Yeah,
but go ahead. Ruin me.
So she is now also a paladin, which I mentioned like there would be like, I mean, there could have been worse stuff, Corey. I can't remember which, like, I totally get, like, they have conflicting stat focuses. But I wanted her to be able to have, one of the things that bummed me out was like she was burning through spell slots.
Yeah.
And once she was out of like healing utility, even if like it wasn't, even if people weren't like in need of it, she just kind of felt like she didn't have much use. She wasn't like hitting hard. She wasn't like, I could throw like a fireball, but it was like, I was like, I need her to have some use beyond this. And so, like, I wanted her, I have leaned her over into having some paladin stuff, which so far has been great. She's been, like, getting it with some smites. She has just, like, a wide usage where it's, like, she has spells. She has channel divinity. She has lay on hands stuff. Like she has a lot of pulls she can draw from. And it's just like, she's doing a good job right now, Corey. I don't know what's time to tell you.
I just don't think you understand clerics.
Maybe I don't, but like Shadowheart feels like she can whoop some booty and she's out there. And that's the thing is like, I know I get it that like from a MMO perspective, for instance, like people, they have their utility. Like if you're a tank, you're the best tank. You don't focus on your damage output. You don't like you focus on how can I keep aggro? Same thing with like damage dealers, deal more damage. Healers only heal. Don't focus on. And it's like with this, it doesn't feel like it's built that way. It feels like they're like if people could cast infinitely, that's one thing. Like if Shadowheart could be sitting back there like just throwing out spells constantly, that's one thing. I get it. But like it feels like you need the option to be able to pivot. That is in my head looking at it is like I need the option to be able to go and like if I've drained through my resources, I need to be able to have a plan B. She can't just be this useless lump sitting off to the side that can't do anything. And it's the same thing with, it will transition me into Gale.
Let me give my spiel for clerics. Because clerics are the best class in D&D 5e.
Uh-huh.
Period. Healing is very bad in D&D 5e. It's meant to be supplemented with potions. You should have hundreds of healing potions. But have you ever used the spell Bless?
Yeah.
Have you used Bane?
Yes.
Okay. What are we missing here? Do you use Spirit Guardians?
No.
You don't do spirit?
I think I only recently got Spirit Guardians.
Maybe. Just get Spirit Guardians, go stand in the middle, and watch it be a buzzsaw as enemies will flock to Shadowheart. But because it does so much damage, anytime they want to be close to her, every turn, they're just taking like anywhere from 12 to 20-something damage. Everyone who's in her radius. Summon a guardian.
How is it not better to be able to do that when she can take a few more hits?
She can take plenty of hits.
I'm just saying, Corey.
Those 6th level slots, those 5th level spell slots, when you can cast mass cure wounds, where you can cast cure wounds on everyone within 60 feet of you, you're going to be missing that big time. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But she's right now, she's rocking it. I'm digging it.
Infinite long rest.
But still, that's such a. I want to be able to go, Corey. I just want to.
The 120 hour game.
I just want to be able.
I just want to be able to roll.
Okay. Gale. Brings me to
Here's
Gale.
Gonna be the worst one. Here's
gonna so be. Gale is in. Gale has evolved beyond his original form. he is no longer a wizard. He is a.
Excuse me.
He is a storm sorcerer. He is a storm sorcerer and he is a tempest cleric.
That's the show, people. My name's Corey Thrasher. It's been wonderful. Deuces.
Trying to get some of that utility in there, him being able to spin, because that's the thing is like Gale is good at one thing, but I need them to be like, that's cool if he can summon meteors at level 6, but it's like, maybe I want him to be able to do a little bit more than just summon a meteor.
He can every do everything. He's then. A wizard. Were you not giving him spell scrolls?
He was getting spells. He had to, but it's also like, how many spells does he need?
He can learn every spell. That's I know with he wizards. Can,
but like, how much do you need? Like, why do you need 100 spells that are like, I can like do this. Random ad. Why do I have to scroll through 800 pages of spells to find the one that I need? Whereas with this, he can do he has a lot of the spells that he can use otherwise. Mm. He has the meta magic abilities that he can use to kind of diversify those. Plus, with the cleric side, he also can take up some buffing duties. The Tempest Cleric will allow him to also capitalize on some of those like maximal damage lightning buffs. Like, I'm just telling you, Corey, just because you don't see the potential does not mean that it's not there.
He's massacred my boy. Slay.
I mean, I hate to tell you that you're wrong, but I mean, it's gonna.
I know I'm not wrong. I am. If one of my, I would let them do this. But if a player at my table was like, "Hey, I'm gonna multi-class this," I'm like, "All right, well, when you have fun with that, we're gonna see how this goes."
And then your jaw drops as they drag the kingdom.
The wizard it knows everything. You have much utility.
That's so great. Utility. But I don't know. Maybe I'll change. Maybe I haven't seen it. Maybe I'm just like, maybe those last couple levels are just going to blow my mind and my whole thing. I'm looking at it now and I'm like, man, I was like, I see a vision for these guys and they're rolling. They're doing it. They're getting it.
I think the final sequence in Act Two is going to hit you like a buzzsaw.
Okay.
And I'm excited for it because you're going to see how wrong you are to have done this.
I will be very honest and seed your knowledge. If I come into that, I'm like, yeah, this just didn't, I had to respec out of this because it's not working, but I don't foresee it.
That sequence, I mean, you might come in and be like, it was easy, but there is a fight towards the end of Act Two, which I like had to retry so many times because it is a bloodbath. And everyone who has played the game knows exactly which one I'm talking about because it might be the hardest fight in the game, bar a very, very late game fight, which you are currently on pace to be. Also just defecated on by it.
I doubt it. If they're rolling up and they're with this set, they're gonna get something. But yeah, Corey, I'm excited to prove you wrong.
The Karlach build's a good one. I'll give you that.
Yeah. It's great combo. Yeah. I think she's rolling. She's killing it. My bard's, he's picking up some steam.
It's a good one.
He's getting it. So I'm feeling it, Corey. I'm liking it. This has been a good episode, Corey. The episode's coming up for everybody unaware of how this season usually goes. Yeah. Next few weeks, it's all end of the year stuff from here on out. It's, Game of the Year discussions will happen end of the year, post Christmas around New Year's ish.
Should be coming out like January 2nd, January 3rd, right at the turn.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And then, but over the next couple of weeks, it'll be a couple of one off episodes about like best games that we played this year that didn't come out this year. TM. A title. Wonderful one. And then also best non-gaming things of the year we'll also talk about, which is always a fun time. So look forward to that. Get excited. I'm sure we'll still, you'll hear my Baldur's Gate 3 escapades, here and there and stuff. And like it'll but look forward to that. That'll be fun. Corey. Is that it?
I think that's a good week. Yeah, Game Awards. Game Awards and Destruction of Character. It's fine.
Yeah, well, you gotta have them both. Corey, where can people find you this week if they want to find you this week?
I think his Wi-Fi dropped, but mine's still going. And so, he's back.
Oh, yeah, you froze for a second on my screen.
You froze for a second. I was ready to sign off. I thought it dropped. I was ready. All right. I was like, all right, folks, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?
Yep. But no.
Nope.
Where can people find you on the internet, Corey? They want to find you this week.
This week, if you want to find me on the internet, I have a wonderful LinkedIn profile. Instagram, hash.slanging.thrasher. This is Corey Thrasher. If you wish to follow, go for it. There's also, what was it? Because my wife was watching with me. There was a game called Thrasher that was announced or something. Really? And she just looked at me and was like, what? I'm like, that's my name.
In a game.
So, I mean, there's a hockey team named after, or yeah, named after me. And then the brand, but anyway, that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Chris?
I am on LinkedIn. I feel like, I mean, considering the fact that I'm not really active on any other social media, I guess that's where I'm the most active, partially because, you know, some for work. So I have, like, I see it a little bit more often. So yeah, hit me up there if you can find me. If not,
follow Sean Murray.
He's
a great follower. He's funny.
On X. Find him. Follow him. Get excited for Light No Fire. That'll be exciting. But yeah, Corey, until next week, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?
My boy.